Welcome to Chasing Perfection, a UConn women's basketball podcast. The moment that we have really waited all season for is here. Selection Sunday has come and gone. The NCAA tournament begins tomorrow, technically, right? With the first four, or is it tonight, actually?
It's currently ongoing. Richmond is okay, playing Nebraska right now.
So Wednesday night, the first round as we know it, as opposed to the first four, begins on Friday. It's taken a long time to get here because I think back to being in Annapolis for that opener against Louisville, and really that like feels so long ago. And yet I can't believe that we're at the NCAA tournament again. Every year I feel the same way, where it's like I just don't understand how another one is here and we're about to get into it. So it's exciting, it's crazy, it's all of those things.
Yeah, it's always such a fun time of year, so I am excited, but it does feel crazy that we are already at March 19th or 18th and the season is almost over.
Yeah, so there's simply nowhere else that we can begin than our own resident bracketologist, Megan, went 68 for 68 on the field. That is very worthy of some applause and some praise, and I would like to know, how confident were you in those 68? What were your biggest surprises for the bracket at large? And I don't have your tweet in front of me of like every little stat, so just like run through some of your other bracketology factors and numbers.
Yeah, so 68 for 68, I was, I think, 64 of 68 within a seed line, and then 15 That's of 16 good. On the host teams. I actually felt like very good going in about the 68 of 68, like as much as I was excited about it when it happened, it felt like it was a year where there was kind of a clear line. I feel like some years there's like, you don't really know who's going to be in or out, like it's kind of splitting hairs at the bubble, but I felt like this year there was just a pretty clear differentiator, and you kind of knew that, like, I think Richmond was the last team in, and like this drop between Richmond and the next team was a pretty big one.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But I think biggest surprise for me was probably Tennessee. Just, I feel like no one knew what to do with them because, like, what do you do with a 16-13 team that also has five quad one wins? And, like, I think this is going to be a more common thing in, like, this new world where we have these jumbo conferences. So, like, that's looks bad on paper, but is actually, like, a decent resume. But they fell all the way to a 10, which was, like, I think a little shocking just given the number of quality wins that they had and, like, the teams around them. But also, like, with the full meltdown they had to end the season, like, is reasonable.
I think it's, like, the perfect example. Gino is ranting about this. I don't remember whether this was after the Big East tournament or Selection Sunday, that being in a good conference doesn't inherently make you a good team, and having a good resume doesn't inherently make you a good team, just in the way that UConn can be the best team in the country and not be in the particularly good conference. Tennessee feels like almost the antithesis of UConn in that way.
Yeah. Like, they aren't a good team, but they have the resume of a good team because at points in the season they look like a decent team. It's hard to do, but I mean, I think it makes sense where they fell. It's just, like, one of those things where, like, on paper they have so much talent that, like, I even think they're going to make it out of the first round? Probably not. But, like, it's not, like, the team I would want to see if I was a 2 seed as a 10.
That's fair. So let's go straight into UConn's region because there wasn't a ton of mystery. I think the big one is that they avoided Michigan by the nature of Michigan being a 2 seed as opposed to a 3 seed as you had them projected, as I think ESPN also did.
Yeah.
They instead get Ohio State, who UConn's already seen this season. UConn handled pretty comfortably. So just to very quickly run through the whole thing if you missed it, UConn is playing UTSA. It is 8 seed Iowa State against 9 seed Syracuse. Number 5, Maryland is playing number 12, Murray State. Number 4, North Carolina is playing number 13, Western Illinois. I did not know that was a Division I school, but their nickname is the Leathernecks because they're a Bulldog mascot, and I think that's awesome. Notre Dame, the 6th seed, still has to play a team from Connecticut. Number 11, Fairfield. Number 3, Ohio State takes on number 14, Howard. The 7-10 game is Illinois on the high seed, Colorado on the low seed, 7-10 being the 7 the high, 10 the low. I never know which one to say. And then Vandy playing High Point in the 2:15 game. The obvious storyline that everyone is going to be talking about until either the game happens or one of these two teams loses is the potential for a UConn versus Shea Ralph matchup in the Elite Eight, which we knew was probably going to happen after Vanderbilt got killed by Ole Miss in the SEC tournament. But to have it locked in is a dream for journalists, at least.
Yeah, exactly. There's just so many storylines there. And I mean, outside of just like the UConn like connection of Shea Ralph and all of that, which is obviously so much fun and a fun story, like there's a lot from a national perspective too of like the player of the year conversation. I mean, it's, in my opinion, like Sarah Strong is very clearly the best player in the country, and there's not much debate. But if you're looking for a debate, a national player of the year comes down to Sarah Strong and Mikayla Blakes as well. So having that potential head-to-head matchup is fun.
Yeah, if anyone else is in the conversation, it is Blake's. I know some certainly come out. I wonder if some get voted on after that game. Because if Sarah has even just like a medium Sarah game where it's like 15 points, 10 rebounds, I don't know, take your pick of like split up 15 between 15. The number 15 between assists, blocks, and steals. And Blake's maybe has 20, but shoots 6 for 25 getting there. Then if there still is a vote left, then I think Sarah would lock it up. And then conversely, if you know something crazy happens and Vandy upsets UConn with Mikayla Blakes going off, then I think Mikayla Blakes might end up winning a National Player of the Year award. So, yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. It's not just the student versus teacher potential with Shea and Gino.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's too easy to get in your head up yourself and just get excited for that game because there are three games that will come before that, but it is an exciting prospect.
Yeah, we will make our picks, but let's run through some of the other storylines. UTSA, this is the third straight year UConn has opened with an opponent they've never seen before. Last year was Arkansas State. The year before that, it was Jackson State. I think this wasn't the first thing that jumped off when I heard about it. I actually did not know this until I started looking up UTSA to write about them. This is the American Conference representative in the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
The conference that UConn used to play in has one team in, and it is a 16 seed. My God, why did we ever, like, we shouldn't complain about the Big East at all.
to be fair, like, it was a major upset that they won the American. Like, had it been Rice or, like, South Florida, they would have been, like, a 12, but still, yes.
Yes, but that's not good for the narrative.
No.
And also, like, if, yeah, I know they were, like, 9-9, they were barely above 500, but if, I don't know, who's a good Big East equivalent? Like, if St. John's maybe ended up winning, they wouldn't be a 16 seed, would they?
No, they would have been, like, a 12. They would have been in the same category as, like, a Rice or a, like, South Florida might have been a 13 because they had some bad losses. But, like, Rice was who I think was expected to win the American. And
yeah.
They would have been a 12.
Yeah, so my point is, like, we spent so many hours on this podcast complaining about the Big East, and rightfully so. But the floor of that conference is just so, so much higher than not only like what the American was, but the dead corpse of the American now that's basically just Conference USA from 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So then the 8-9 game, we've also got a lot going on there. So 8 seed Iowa State, I'm going to call them Iowa at some point. I can just feel it. Audi Crooks, really exciting there. I also really liked what Gino said. Back when UConn won its first ever NCAA tournament game, it came against Toledo in 1991. It was a 3-11 game with UConn as the 3. It was still a dogfight. Carrie Bascom scored a program record, I think it was 39 points. She needed an and one with 19 seconds left to put UConn ahead by one. Toledo comes down the other way. They get fouled when they're shooting. The player misses both foul shots. Toledo then gets its own rebound, gets fouled again, but then the refs huddle together. One of the refs, who is Dee Kantner, everyone's favorite. Sorry, I have one aside. I don't know why everyone hates Dee Kantner. I don't pay attention close enough to the refs to have a hot take about Dee Kantner, but I just know everyone has an opinion about Dee Kantner. They all huddle together, talk for a long time, and then determine the foul came after the buzzer had sounded. Game's over. UConn has its first NCAA tournament victory after going 0-2 in its first two. They end up going to the program's first Final Four. Gino has said many, many times that without that Final Four run, nothing else afterwards would have happened. That is a very roundabout way of saying, you know who the head coach of that Toledo team was? Bill Fennelly, who is Iowa State's coach now. So Gino said he's coming back to torment me. I can feel it. So lots to do with that, Audie Crooks. That would be a fun one in the second round.
Yeah, it would be fun. It'd be interesting. It'd be a great test for the bigs when we talk about, like, what is Sarah Williams going to bring to this tournament? What are you going to get from Jenna? Like, I don't think they're going to have any problems with Iowa State if they get that matchup, because Iowa State can't guard anyone. So UConn's going to score at will and probably put up 100 points and be just fine. But it would just be a good test for the bigs to, in a less high-stakes game, like, get a really tough matchup and see what they can do with that.
Yeah, and then they are playing Syracuse, who Carl Adamek pointed out, and I wholeheartedly agree with him, gets kind of a raw deal from the committee. This is going to be their, if they win, this would be their third second-round game against UConn in the since 2017, with the COVID tournament not happening. I can never, like, keep track of how many that's been, but since then, it would be their third time. You could put a 9 seed anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, that just feels tough for them. Felicia Leggett Jack is one of my favorite coaches in the country. I always love listening to coaches and hearing them talk and thinking, like, if they were recruiting me, would I want to go play for them? And I don't know how anyone says no to her. She is awesome and will provide plenty of great sound bites and will basically spend the entire weekend telling everyone how much she loves Gino and UConn.
Yes. I feel like she's gotten a particular bad draw too, because I feel like they played Buffalo in the NCAA tournament when she was coaching there.
Oh, yeah.
Too. So she's seen UConn a lot in the NCAA tournament.
Did they? I know Buffalo got to a regional.
Was it then, or was it? I feel like they played Buffalo at Stores one year.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
Buffalo was in a regional in Albany, I think it was 2018, and I don't think UConn ended up playing them, right? I don't believe they did.
Yeah,
I don't think so. The next year, they ended up in the second round with UConn. So yeah, Syracuse and Felicia combined would have four second round matchups against UConn in the last 10 years or whatever it is, 10 tournaments. Why not stick Princeton there? If you want storylines, this could have been the all former UConn regional if Carla Berube was at Princeton, with Shea at Vandy, and then with, we'll talk about it, but Saylor and Mir McClain at Maryland. Oh man, we could have really packed it all in.
Yeah, I think it probably just comes down to, you're supposed to put teams, like, regionally where it's close, and Syracuse was probably higher on that nine line than Princeton, so I think I got the first choice. But yeah, I don't know if, like, getting to play UConn once again is actually their first choice, even though it's the closest.
Princeton will have to settle for a trip to Los Angeles. I'm sure they'll suffer. I wonder if Caitlin Chen can go to that game.
Oh, yeah.
She's a native of L.A. I think Athletes Unlimited ended, right?
Yeah, I think so. So she probably has some free time until the W.
Yeah, that would be fun for her. So moving on down, Maryland, as I said, they've got Saylor Poffenbarger and Mir McClain. This is their final year of eligibility. So theoretically, if they get to the Elite Eight, the Sweet 16, which is by no means a guarantee, UConn would have the ability to end their careers. There would be a lot of drama in that. It would be fun. It would be a lot more fun than UNC would be.
Yeah. Yeah, I would give something to talk about. The UNC game wouldn't really do all that much for me.
No.
But
I don't have a whole lot to say about UNC or Murray State or Western Illinois. Like, do you have anything on any of those
Murray
teams?
State, like, If there was going to be a big, well, actually, no, I have a different pick for if there's going to be a big upset in this bracket. But Murray State has a player, and I'm blanking on her name, but that's, like, very capable of putting up 30 points, like a big electric scorer.
Mia?
I know, I should know what it is. Look it up.
Hallie Pook.
Yes, Hallie Pook. She's a really, really good player. So, like, there's potential for that Maryland-Murray State game to get interesting if she kind of goes off. I'm not picking it as an upset, but it's like one that could get interesting. I have nothing to say about like Western Illinois, though. I don't see that being anything.
No, Western Illinois was I was getting Murray State confused with. They lost their leading scorer in like December, and then Mina Castro has ended up being just this awesome player for her in their senior year, and for them in her senior year. So it's a cool story that is going to come nowhere near UConn's radar, unfortunately.
Right. Exactly.
All right, for shot and fruit purposes, this one might be the most exciting one in the region. Notre Dame against Fairfield. First of all, I like Notre Dame being in the region because anytime you could set up a potential postseason matchup with those teams, I like it. The fact that it's Fairfield that they're going to have to play, I think that's even better.
Yeah, I also like, look, this is a game that Fairfield can win. Fairfield's biggest weakness is like they don't have any size, and Notre Dame also doesn't have any size. So this one has potential to get like very interesting. I mean, I kind of expect Notre Dame to win it because Hannah Hidalgo is going to be the best player on the floor, but like Fairfield might have like the second and third best players in Megan Anderson and Katie Lamoureux.
I haven't finalized my picks yet. I have Notre Dame winning because this year I'm really trying to stick to more of a what's actually going to happen than what I want to happen. Since I probably should have said earlier, I created a bracket group for Chasing Perfection. If you just search, I'll put it in the show notes down below. Also, if you just search Chasing Perfection on ESPN, that's where I set it up. You should be able to find it fairly easily. But man, I really want to pick Fairfield. I think I might pick Fairfield just for the fun of it.
I think I might too. Largely because I told myself that to be reasonable. And if Richmond beat Nebraska tonight, I was going to pick Richmond to beat Baylor. But Richmond's down by 20 to Nebraska. So I guess that's not going to happen. So I guess I will go with Fairfield instead.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. But am I insane for thinking that Ohio State isn't the worst matchup for Fairfield either?
No, it's not. Like, they also don't have, like, a giant, like, big presence.
But they're just a much, much better team.
Yeah. I don't think that Ohio State, like, Fairfield's going to be Ohio State. But, like, I very much think they could be Notre Dame.
Yeah. I think Ohio State really feels like either they're next year they're going to be like a Final Four contender legitimately, mm-hmm. because they're way ahead of schedule as is, or they're going to be the next Iowa State where like you think that you just keep expecting that they're going to take that step forward and they never do because they've got all the young talent that you could want, but they got to develop them, keep improving the roster around them, and set themselves up well for success.
Yeah. I will say if Notre Dame does win and you get Notre Dame Ohio State, like Hannah Hidalgo, Jelani Cambridge is going to be a very, very fun game.
Yeah, I don't think Notre Dame gets to the Elite Eight, but boy, would it be fun if they did. I did like the story. I was reading ESPN's 68 blurbs on the 68 teams. Howard has apparently gone up against Norfolk State in the MEAC championship game 4 years in a row. They have lost the previous three and won this year to get through, so I thought that was a pretty cool story, even though I really don't have a whole lot else on them.
Yeah, I don't have much else either, but yeah, that is fun. Always fun when it's like a different team that gets it to the tournament. Though also, I always feel bad. I think Howard actually was the one seed, so I don't actually feel that bad for
interesting.
But I always feel bad when it's like a one seed that's had a great season, and then they lose in like some heartbreaking way in the championship game, and then don't get to go to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. And then down into the Nashville sub-regional, we've got 7-seed Illinois, 10-seed Colorado. Illinois has been really good under Shauna Green ever since she took over. And then I love me some J.R. Payne. I remember I got into Seattle, the Seattle regional, early one day or something, and I was trying to find someone, so I just poked my head into the Colorado presser. I don't know if they're in, I don't think they are in the same region as UConn. They were somewhere else, but I just listening to J.R. Payne, I just thought she was great. So shout out Colorado. I picked them, even though I don't actually know if that's a good pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of a colorful game to me. I think it could go either way. Illinois, like a super young team, but a team that I feel like if they can keep all the pieces they've got, like going into next year, this is a team that's going to be like probably a top 25 team next year, like definitely a good team going forward.
Yeah. And then Vandy High Point, the fun fact I have with High Point is the last first round game that for UConn when Shea was on staff came against High Point. But then I realized while I was writing up some blurbs that Shea didn't coach in that game because she had to go back home. She got exposed to COVID because a family member had it. She left the bubble out of an abundance of caution and wasn't there for her last tournament run as a member of the Husky staff. So now she actually will get to coach against them with her own program at Vanderbilt.
That is funny. That is a wild fun fact.
Yeah. That's the region. I feel like it's a pretty good draw for UConn. Like, yeah. I was worried about Michigan landing with them, just given the game we had earlier this season. Now you're not going to see Michigan unless they make the championship game. And if UConn sees Michigan in the championship game, I am not worried about Michigan at that point.
Yeah.
The Sweet 16 potential matchups don't worry me whatsoever. They'd easily handle any of those teams, I think. And as much fun as the Vanderbilt story would be, and you know, Michaela Blakes could probably be dangerous if it is Vandy in the Elite Eight, it feels like they're playing with house money. They haven't been great in these big matchups, and I think UConn has too much for them overall. I think UConn has too much size. I think Shea would very quickly get to see that she is trying to build her own thing at Vanderbilt, but she is not building another UConn quite yet.
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, Blake could come, go off and make it a game, but I think UConn's going to have a game plan for her. I mean, they'll find a way to make her life difficult, and then I think beyond that, UConn just has too much talent for compared to what Vanderbilt has around their stars.
Yeah, they're going to have a great defensive game plan. They've got 2/3 different people that can take on that task, and I was thinking KK and AZ is like the top two, but like would you be stunned if Sarah Strong ends up on her at all? So Kaylee Heckel would probably get some run at that spot. Like, it would be one of those games where they basically say literally anyone else can beat us.
Yeah, exactly. Like, focus your attention on her. I mean, they've got like their point guard's been really good, Aubrey Galvin, but she is a freshman too. So, like, get KK in her face some and, like, get her disrupted. I think they'll have a fine defensive game plan.
Yeah, so let's get into our picks because I think we've kind of hit on the bigger stuff elsewhere. Or I'll hit the big storylines elsewhere. UCLA, well, UConn was the number one overall seed. I don't actually think we mentioned that. Not that there is any surprise. I think I saw that the committee basically said that the eye test was the differential, which I think makes plenty of sense. So UCLA ends up as the second overall seed in the Sacramento 2 regional. They are paired with LSU.
I was going to say, did you see the clip of Gino saying how, like, it doesn't matter what conference we're in, we've won more championships than the Big Ten and the Big 12 and the ACC combined? I found that hilarious.
So good. The one thing is he said 13 national championships.
He's counting this year already.
Counting this year already? Was he saying, like, the Big East has 13 titles? Maybe. Which, that's a weird way of doing math. If it is, because you have the Notre Dame title back in 2001. I think that's the only other one that's non-UConn. But not all of UConn's 12 have come in the Big East, but I guess because they're in the conference, they get credit for those? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either way. Or he's
funnier. Knows. It's much funnier if he just already started counting it. And I will say, talking with him on Selection Sunday, I thought he seemed very loose. I thought he was It gave me similar vibes to the press conference before the South Carolina regular season game last year, where he wasn't trying to tip his hand, but you could tell that he quietly felt very, very confident. And then he said that if they're serious and they're more if the players are serious and they're more confident going into this tournament than they were last year, he said in so many words, like, good luck everybody else.
Yeah.
So that is the top right regional. Princeton's the 9 seed with UCLA. Villanova is the 10 seed in that same region. Bottom right, that is Fort Worth 3 regional. That's where Texas is as the number 1 seed. They've also got Michigan as the number 2. Also Vermont as the 14 seed. Their second straight tournament appearance, third in 4 years, and they won their first outright America East title during the regular season since the 90s or the 80s. So 14 seed, pretty good for Vermont.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, they don't have to play UConn.
I'm very glad that the committee has kept them away from another game with UConn.
Yeah,
because not that they have any chance, with all due respect, to win a game, but like, they've already done the UConn thing. Maybe you can send them back to UConn in a couple years when it's a whole new group,
right?
Assuming they're still at that level. But I have one aside, and I was tweeting something about Vermont. My mom went to Vermont, so I've always liked their basketball teams. And after they won the America East title, I noticed they had won a tournament game before and gotten to the second round in 2010. So I looked them up. I think the tournament was a lot better in 2010 because Vermont was a 10 seed. And the America East was a 2-bid conference with Jen Rosati's Hartford also getting in. I just cannot fathom the America East having 2 bids in 2025, simply because I don't think the committee would give them an ounce of respect. I think it was probably different with the metrics back then too, but like, I also think it's just mid-majors were treated differently back then than they are now.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, it could happen if someone started to have like a program, like when you look at like the MAC, for example, like,
yeah,
Fairfield has kind of come out of the St. woodwork in the last few years and have great coaching staff. And like, if they didn't win that tournament this year, they would have been in the conversation for an at-large.
It's true.
It also takes this like one program. You have the Summit League the same this year, like a Summit is South Dakota State. They've always been good, but like, they could have been a 2-bid league. The A-10 was, but like, the A-10, I think, is a high level mid-major conference right now. Like, there's a lot of talent there. So
yeah. Yeah. Like, I always view the America East as like one of those low majors.
Yeah. Which, like, the MAC was, or there still is, other than Fairfield is and good, and Quinnipiac has been good at times, but yeah.
The America East is just such like a beautiful college sports conference because it's so regional. All the teams are like very similar to each other in terms of like, there's a lot of state schools that aren't throwing resources into their athletic departments like UConn is. It's like Maine, Vermont, UNH. I'm sure there's others. I think CCSU should join. That's another whole conversation we don't have to get in. But like, that's the way a college conference should be.
Right. Exactly.
Alrighty. Bottom left, we have South Carolina as the Sacramento 4 regional. They're going out west. They're the 1 seed, and then Iowa is the 2 seed there. Not really a whole lot of surprises. So let's get into our picks. We'll start with the UConn region. I think let's not pick every single game, but who do you have in the second round against UConn? Who do you have UConn playing in? Yeah, let's just go through the line. I'm assuming you have UConn getting at least to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, no, that would be a crazy take, as one of my coworkers was trying to do today. yes, I have them playing Iowa State in the second round, and then North Carolina in the Elite Eight.
Sweet 16.
And Vanderbilt. Or sorry, Sweet 16, yes, and then Vanderbilt in the Elite Eight. I got that mixed up. Okay.
I also have Iowa State. I have Maryland in the Sweet 16 for no good reason other than I'd rather have that matchup. I have a hot take with the Elite Eight. We're going to have all this talk about it being Geno versus Shea, UConn versus Vandy. I don't think Vandy's going to get there. And my argument is, man, I hope no one from Vanderbilt listens to this because this would look really bad. This would not be great for me if Shea ends up as the next coach at UConn. Vanderbilt has not been great in the tournament under Shea Ralph. And I think part of that is no team is good early on in the postseason when they're building a program. Geno was 0-2 in the tournament, NCAA tournament start. He probably started the Big East tournament 0-2. But the numbers are 2-6, I believe, in the SEC tournament and 1-2 in the NCAA tournament. And my biggest points are this year's Ole Miss game in the SEC tournament and last year's Oregon game in the NCAA tournament. They were the higher seed in both. They didn't play particularly well in either. I just don't feel great about their chances to get to the... It always feels like the more we talk about one potential matchup happening, like how much did we talk about UConn getting the Ohio State rematch in the Sweet 16 in 2024 and then Duke knocked them off in the second round and it was all irrelevant. So that's my... Probably my... I'd say that's my second hottest take on my bracket is I think Vandy goes down in the Sweet 16 to Ohio State.
That's fair. And I mean, Ohio State's been really good this year. Like, after that UConn game, I know they didn't look good in that UConn game, but I mean, they've played UCLA around like 10 points a few times. Like, it wouldn't be a shocking upset.
No, that is a garden variety upset. That upset should happen five times in the NCAA tournament. I know that can't happen.
It's not
that
really
level
an upset.
Upset.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like one of those things that they'll call an upset, but it's not really an upset when the three beats a two. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, let's go over to UCLA's regional. Any, just maybe give us your Elite Eight matchup, your Final Four pick, and then any other upsets you have or any other matchups you want to talk about in that region.
I have UCLA, LSU for the Elite Eight, and then putting Ole Miss through to the Sweet 16 because I just think they've looked really good in the SEC tournament, and Coding Command has kind of seemed to have reached another level recently, so I have them beating Minnesota in Minnesota to get to the Sweet 16.
I like that. I picked Gonzaga simply because of Enesh.
Fair.
Really no vibes beyond that. I also, like, I hear your point on Ole Miss. The fact that Coach Yeo is always saying that her team is disrespected and doesn't get... enough credit, I think, is just kind of a telltale sign. What's the famous saying that, like, people, like, if you're really good at something, you don't have to tell everyone how good you are? And Coach Yeo is always trying to tell people how good they are, and you don't need to do that. So I don't know. Do I really believe in that upset? No, but I hate just picking all higher seeds. I also really was impressed by Minnesota when they played UConn a couple of years ago. I think that coach is doing a good job. I think they've got some good players. So even if I picked Ole Miss, I think I would have Minnesota to the Sweet 16. But
that's fair.
And then I also have Villanova winning.
Oh, yes. Same. I don't even think that's going to be close. I think they're going to beat Texas Tech. I feel like they should have been better than a 10 seed. I think they should have been an 8 or a 9. I think I was a 9, knowing the committee would probably not put them as an 8, but
that makes sense.
I think they're a better team than a 10 seed. I would be annoyed if that was a 7 and that's who I got as a 10.
Interesting. All right, the Elite Eight, I also have UCLA and LSU. I am picking LSU for two reasons. One, I don't think the Final Four is going to be exactly the same as it was last year. That never happens. And if I'm going to put my eggs in someone's basket to get back from that Final Four, I'm going to pick the two best coaches, Geno and Don, who have gotten there basically every single year without fail. And then the other part is, did you see video, I don't know why that was so hard, of Corey Close saying publicly that Lauren Betts told her that she wanted LSU in the Elite Eight?
Yeah.
Why are you doing that to yourself? Yeah. Why are you doing that to Kim Mulkey? Of all the coaches in the country that can hold a... Kim Mulkey might be the greatest grudge holder in world history.
No, I think Muffet has her beat right now, but about other than that.
Kim Mulkey hasn't talked to her dad in like 20 years.
That is true.
Kim Mulkey like disowned her sister because her sister made like a snide comment one time. Kim Mulkey is on a different level with grudge holding. You don't think she's already put that video up in every single stall on every single space of their practice facility? What are you doing? don't say that. So if I'm going to pick someone to go down, I'm going to pick Kim Mulkey to be one of the reasons to do so. A slighted yeah. Kim Mulkey. Yeah. Give me that.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a great choice.
Oh, man. Just so self-inflicted. Do you have UCLA?
I have them in the Final Four, yeah. I think this team is really good. I don't think they're going to beat UConn, but I think they're really good.
Okay, that's fair.
And their experience, too, though. They've been there before. Like, their entire starting lineup, plus their main bench players, are all seniors. It's unfortunate for them that UConn is as good as it is, because, like, this is their year to get it, but I don't think they're going to get it.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, let's go bottom right to the Texas region. I will let you kick it off.
My Elite Eight here is Texas and Louisville, and I also was refusing to put all, like, the one seeds into my Final Four, so this is where I decided to pick someone else, and I have Jeff Walls carrying this Louisville team to a Final Four.
All right, this is my region that's going to send me into, like, the bottom 10th percentile of our bracket group. I have Kentucky beating Texas.
I thought about it. It's not a bad take. It's not a bad take.
West Virginia has been sneaky. They've gotten some teams this year. I don't think anybody is talking about them. They won the Big 12. Not that the Big 12 is the SEC. It more falls back on the, I don't think we're going to have all four teams back in the Final Four. I don't think we're going to have half the Final Four back either. And I still just think there's something about Texas that if you play like it's 1980, someone's like, that's just not a long-term recipe for success. I know that I think their players are really great. Like, I think Rory Harmon's really good. I think Maddie Booker's really good. I know they've got some other pretty good pieces in there too. I think Vic Schaefer is probably in that, like, second tier of coaches behind, like, for argument's sake, like, putting Gino and Don in the same category as, like, the best of the best. I think Vic is in, like, that second tier. I don't know. Why make a bracket where just the higher seed wins every game?
Yeah, it's just not fun. I was like, as much as I probably, like, I could very much see it being all the one seeds, like, it's just, that's no fun.
Yeah. And then I actually am on the same wavelength as you. I have Louisville going to the Final Four because of the Jeff Walls factor. I think this is actually a pretty good Louisville team.
Yeah, no, I think they're very good. I think the transfer pieces have come together nicely. And, like, Jeff just has a way of, like, getting these teams churning in like, March, and they're always good. I'm also excited that this is the Fort Worth I Love a Jeff Walls press conference. Always entertaining.
Oh, I didn't think of that. Yeah.
So, yeah, I have Louisville getting there. My only other, like, I think, like, hot take in this region is I have Rhode Island beating Alabama. I don't know if that's really, like, if actually going to happen, but because I had to take my Richmond pick out because they're about to lose, I had to give the A-10 some love.
That's funny. I was going to say the exact same thing. I also picked them for no reason other than they're located in New England. And, I mean, they're a good little program in the A-10, so it's not totally crazy, but so many of these picks are with my heart, not my head.
I have a special place in my heart for the A-10. I love them.
Another just, like, great college conference. Yeah. A conference that's doing it right.
Exactly.
Rhode Island.
And a conference, like, that, like, is trying to, like, figure out how to, like, make things better for their top teams. I won't go on my, like, a soapbox about, like, what the Richmond coach said online and stuff right now, because I don't know that anyone here cares, but I think they're, like, the coaches at the top of that conference are really committed to, like, trying to be better.
Yeah, totally. All right, let's move it over to our last region. South Carolina is the headliner. Oh, I was gonna say this is my most standard region. It is not. I've got Iowa and South Carolina meeting in the Elite Eight. I think the team with the best chance to beat South Carolina is probably going to be Oklahoma in the Sweet 16, the four seed. I don't see it with Iowa. I know they've had a good season, but, like, they just don't impress me at all. So if South Carolina goes down, I think it's there. But if they get to Iowa, I wouldn't be that worried. I think it's going to be a UConn-South Carolina semifinal matchup.
Yeah, I think so too. I have them playing TCU in the Elite Eight, but I mean, neither of TCU or Iowa impresses me all that much. So, at TCU, I guess you have a little bit more interesting, and like you've got Olivia Miles, so that you can they can have the best player on the floor. But I don't know. I agree. I think if they're going to lose, it would be before that. It's going to be Oklahoma that would do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have South Dakota State in the Sweet 16 for no good reason other than I saw them last year. I think their coach is pretty good, and Brooklyn Meyer is also really good.
Yeah, I have them winning the first round against Washington, but didn't put them over TCU. But I could, like, I wouldn't be shocked if this is a team that goes to the Sweet 16. Brooklyn Meyer is, like you said, very good. This is her fourth NCAA tournament. They've won two games, or won a game in two of them. I think. Did they go to the... They might have gone to the Sweet 16 her freshman year. I think, possibly. Yeah.
I also just don't think TCU is anything special.
No, I don't think TCU or Iowa is anything special. I debated if Coach Abe could beat Iowa. Honestly, wouldn't be shocked.
This... Maybe the bottom, aside... Yeah, oh, go ahead. Good.
I was going to say the bottom half of this regional is like screaming chaos to me. Like it could be a 2-3 Sweet 16. If we saw it an 11-7 Sweet 16, I wouldn't be totally crazy. Like think that was totally crazy.
Yeah, I think in the top half of this region, South Carolina got knocked. They got a bit of a bad draw getting Oklahoma as their four. Even Michigan State, I kind of like.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom half, like, that's a bottom half that should be UConn's region, it feels like, with how weak it is. But, like, the rules are as such that it can happen. So I'm not saying that, like, South Carolina got a favorable draw. That's just, like, how it had to go.
Right, exactly. It's what had to happen. Also, honestly, like, I'd rather have more interesting games. Like, if this was UConn's region, they would win the... I mean, they still could win the Elite Eight by 30, but, like, they would win the Elite Eight by 40 in this region. It's just not very interesting.
They would smoke them. Yeah. All right, so the final four. I have UConn, South Carolina, LSU, and Louisville. You have the same, except UCLA swapped out for Louisville. I have UConn... Sorry, that's what I meant. I have UConn beating South Carolina. I have LSU beating Louisville. And then I have UConn beating LSU in the championship game. What's your Phoenix Final Four look like?
I have UConn beating South Carolina and then UCLA beating Louisville and the UCLA-UConn matchup that I've been wanting in the Final Four for like the last 3 years. I finally get and UConn wins it all.
Aside from the one last year?
Oh, well, I meant like in the championship game. We did get it last year. Sorry. I forgot that we got it last year. I was thinking of the year that we got like the UConn lost, and it was like the world, like it was like LSU versus, I don't even know.
Oh, yeah. It was South Carolina against LSU in the final. No, it was Iowa versus South Carolina. Oh, God. No. Iowa versus LSU in the final because Iowa knocked off undefeated South Carolina and LSU beat Virginia Tech.
Yeah, that was my, like, I don't want to be here.
I remember I was in Dallas. I kept my flight to go down to the men's Final Four. And I went to, I think it's called Reunion Tower in Dallas, which is like an observation deck tourist trap thing. And the hotel that's at the base of it was where Virginia Tech's, I don't know if it was their hotel or if it was simply like where the Virginia Tech fans were located, but there was a bunch of Virginia Tech stuff. And I just remember walking through there thinking, like, I hope these guys enjoy every single moment of this Final Four because they're never coming back here again.
Yes.
So, yeah. I feel like I saw one stat, maybe I can pull it up quickly, of... It was something like, of all the brackets that had been picked, like, oh yeah, here it is. 46.3% have UConn as winning the national championship.
I mean, fair. Part of me, like, is worried about, like, UCLA, should we get there? And then part of me is like, no one's going to touch this team in the entire tournament.
I think my biggest fear, this is a good time to go through our biggest fears. is a repeat of those two post-Dewey years. Those were my first two full years on the beat. They're ingrained in my brain. The reason that I don't think it happens is... I've probably said this, but first of all, those teams had no depth. They had one player off the bench that could make any sort of an impact. It was Crystal the first year. It was Azure the second. The other part of it was none of those players on those teams were what's the word when like there's a beam in a building that like is carrying the weight of the entire building. You know what word I'm trying to
like
find?
Like the like support beam, but that's not the right word.
Yeah. Well, like the crucial support. Like if you take out any of those four players from those national championship teams, it doesn't matter because they had Brianna Stewart, Mariah Jefferson, and Morgan Tuck, and pick whatever surrounding cast beyond those guys. With all due respect to what they did on those championship teams. The difference is the key players on this year's team have all been pillars on last year's team. Like, right. AZ Fudd was most outstanding player. They don't win without her. Sarah Strong was an All-American all season. Like, yes, this is her first year in the captain's chair, but it is not like she was the sixth player last year and now she's the star the way that Nafisa Collier, or Gabby Williams, or those guys were. Even KK Arnold, yeah, she's a starting point guard, but she has been a crucial piece on two straight Final Four teams, especially her freshman year, I think is a lot more valuable to that than this year. Same with Ashlyn Shade. Same with Jana. Like, I don't think we can overstate enough how important Jana was last year and how important that experience is to this year. And then on top of that, you've got all this depth of Blanca Quiñones and Sarah Williams and Kaylee Heckel that... if something's not going right, you have so many different ways to fix it. So I think it's more just for me a matter of, is there a game where the confidence that they say they have vanishes, or that they don't handle going down early, or someone punches them in the face and they don't react well, the same way that Mississippi State game went. That is, I think that's the path to beating them, is UConn beats itself by not showing up the way it should, as opposed to you just go blow for blow with someone and the other team comes out on top. Like, if UConn's on its A game, no one's beating them. I think that's pretty obvious. So it's a matter of, does UConn not have its A game every single night? I don't think so, but that's the one thing that keeps me up.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is, like, when you get to that Final Four... like, usually we get there and they've played a South Carolina and they've played teams there. Like, they haven't played anyone at that level all season.
That's a really
and
good
that's
point.
The one thing that, like, makes me worried. Like, do I think, like, from everything we've seen that they are absolutely just as good, if not way better than all of those teams? Yes. But we haven't actually seen it happen this season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've also thought of that, where until they see that level... like, they might go in feeling like they're confident, but, yeah, like, it was when LSU played... who was that first really good team LSU played? Was it Duke this season?
Yeah.
Where LSU had just played a god-awful non-conference schedule, and they went down, what, 15 in the opening quarter because they just hadn't seen anything at that level. Not right. that they're not a good team. Like, obviously, LSU is way better than Duke is, but they just weren't prepared for it.
Yeah. And I mean UConn's played a lot of really good teams, they just haven't played anyone that's quite there. So like when you see a South Carolina or and UCLA for the first time, is that rattle you?
And as I probably say every March, there's always the possibility that you simply don't. Like, I don't think this is a South Carolina team that if they didn't get to the Final Four, you'd be like, how did this team not get there?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I certainly think the South Carolina team could be the national champion when all is said and done. Like, they have that caliber, but it's it's not as strong as in past years that they've had. And as I don't even have UCLA or Texas in my Final Four. So, like, I don't think anyone is infallible. I don't think this is 2016 UConn, where you could have played 1,000 games and that team would have gone 1,000-0.
Yeah.
But I think they are pretty far above the rest of the field. And if they go down, it's going to be by their own hand.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Even still, I just like all the options. We don't need to go into it again. I just, Sarah and AZ.
Yeah. The both they have first two... team All-Americans, by the way.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. And I really did not think, well, to talk about that. So the AP and USBWA teams both came out. Sarah and AZ were both first team All-Americans. I didn't think AZ was going to get first teamers from those because they're five player teams. I simply didn't think that people were going to want to put two UConn players on. Like, that wasn't an anti-AZ thing. I think AZ is obviously, as we now see, fully deserving of being that first team All-American, especially in a year where I think the top talent, not that it's weaker, it's just like there's the A's and mm-hmm. then the B pluses, there's like 10 of them.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a gap between those two. So I didn't think people were going to want to put two UConn people on the first team. Not that I didn't think AZ deserved it. So when clearly you have two of the five best, you have the best player in the country, you have another top five player in the country, then that alone is going to make you really hard to beat. You tag on KK Arnold if she plays like she did in the Big East tournament, and Blanca from what we've seen, and maybe could be even better. And yeah, as I've gone down the list so many times this season,
right,
there's so much.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised to see them both on those first teams, just because I, like you, didn't expect that. People often don't want to put two players from the same team on that roster, but I mean, she certainly earned it. I'm happy for her that she got it.
And it's also an incredibly rare occurrence. I think it was the first time since Lou and Fee were at UConn that any team had multiple AP first team All-Americans. So,
well, maybe it was the USBWA one, that it was like the first time since Oregon, because it was Ruthie and Sabrina were both first team. I saw that somewhere today. Who knows if it was true? I just read it on the internet, probably on Twitter.
I saw Doug tweet something. I kind of glanced through it.
I don't remember where I saw that or who tweeted it or which one it was about. I just remember seeing something about the first time.
It was the first since the Oregon duo.
Okay.
I think it was the first time for UConn since those two. That probably makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
Also, for AP National Player of the Year, Sarah was the only unanimous selection. I'd be pretty stunned if she didn't get National Player of the Year at that point.
I agree. I'm just more confused by who the heck doesn't think Michaela Blakes is the first team All-American.
I was going to say that. And Betts, for that matter.
Yeah. I think, like you have. Yeah. I think those two are very clear, too.
Yeah, I think Sarah is number one. I think you can. Blakes is probably number two, but mm-hmm. Betts is number three in the same tier as Blakes. And then you kind of go down. I'm just looking at the votes, but like it's very clearly Booker, AZ, and Hidalgo in that next tier. And you can argue who you want in mm-hmm. that order. And then it really drops off for who is after that. But yeah, I think if you want to feel really good, they didn't have two AP first team All-Americans last year, and the roster's a heck of a lot better this year.
Yeah, exactly.
We really buried the lead on this one, but we got some pretty major news from the Hartford Current's Dom Amore. Gino told him that he is planning to come back next season. I would say that is a source of personal relief, in that I had a vacation planned to Florida for the first weekend after the Final Four with some of my close friends, and I was terrified about being down there when he retired. And there's also just a very lingering anxiety in my life about my entire job is about people signing up. It is about people having interest in UConn women's basketball enough to sign up and pay for a membership to my coverage. And if Gino leaves, how much of that interest goes down, on top of me just personally enjoying covering the best program in the country. So it was a big relief. I don't think it's any surprise. And I think it's also just worth mentioning that Gino said, like, there are always things that can come up before then that aren't expected, but it is his plan to be back next season.
Yeah, obviously big news. And we can save the who's going to succeed Gino conversation till another time.
A really fascinating conversation.
Yes.
Very. Because if it's not Shay, I don't know. I really don't know who it is.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think Shay is the obvious choice, and then I don't know after that.
Shay is the Dan Hurley.
Yeah.
But no, that would be a fun off-season topic just to bat around when... That's one of those things that we should like record it in May when we both have time. So yeah. Then in June, July, August, when both of us are on opposite sides of the globe doing whatever, we can throw that out there and people right. get an extra podcast when we don't have a time to line it up. So maybe we'll have a few of those this off season. I'll have to bank that idea. But just strictly looking at it, I get asked this all the time, like, when's Gino gonna retire? I've covered him for 11 years. He's given the exact same answer every single time anyone's ever asked him. I don't think... A lot of people were saying he's not leaving Sarah, and I do kind of agree with that, but he also does say there's always going to be another player, and there's going to be Blanca. Like, is he going to want to leave Blanca? And, well, then Vukosa comes along. Is he going to want to leave Vukosa? And then they don't have anyone in the class after that, but, like, they could get someone there, and... They are going to continually be getting top five recruits every single year, adding in with these international kids that they're getting. Eventually, something's going to come up. He's going to decide he doesn't want to... Like, the day will come one way or another. Mm-hmm. I think he's still going to do it for a while. I don't think it's going to be... I don't think it's any more likely to be 2 years from now as maybe, like, 6 years from now. It's probably less than 10 just given his age, but...
Yeah, I tend to agree. I feel like he just still... It's very clear that he still loves... doing it, and yeah. There's always going to be another player, though I don't know that there's ever going to be another player like Sarah, so I do think that he does not leave while Sarah's there.
Yeah he's also growing with the times. If he was going to retire because of NIL or the portal or like all of that stuff, it would have happened already. And maybe this is more wishful thinking than anything, but I feel like those things are going to get better more than they get worse in the next 5 years, because ideally college sports gets some sort of guardrails to fix every player being a free agent, the constant movement, the just wild west nature of tampering and paying players. Like, they eventually have to get a hold of that in theory. maybe they don't, and this is just the world we live in. But if he can already handle what's happening now, I can't imagine this is already the biggest change that he's going to go through as a coach. I can't imagine there's something bigger coming down the line.
Yeah, I agree. I think the changes that have happened in the last few years are by far probably once in a career type changes, no matter how long your career is. So it should be the end of the craziness. Or, like, I mean, it's still going to be crazy, but, like, there shouldn't be anything big coming, I would think, in the next few years.
Or maybe it's UConn stops existing outside the modern college world, where they don't have anyone notable go in the portal, and they aren't...
Yeah.
Like, not that players... Like, their NIL is that their players get a buttload of deals from everybody. Oh my god, you can't look... You drive down the highway, you see them. You turn on your TV, you see them. That has to be a really major recruiting point for them, in that, look, you want to go to LSU, they're going to pay you $500,000 just to play. You want to come to UConn, you are going to make $2 million because look at all these deals. And it's not just Sarah and AZ. Like, Kaylee's in a lot of stuff. Ashlyn and KK are in a lot of stuff. Like, you're going to get a whole lot of opportunities to promote your brand and just make a lot of money by being a member of UConn women's basketball. So...
Yeah, exactly. I think they just have all the opportunities. Being at one of the top programs in the country, you just naturally have, like, those opportunities. So, yeah, I can't see them falling off in that regard.
Yeah, so good news for us as a podcast, good news for us as reporters, good news for all you fans who enjoy annual trips to the Final Four. I keep looking at those lists being like, oh man, I can't wait to go to this city, and it's like, you know, theoretically, they might not be at all of these, like I'm used to.
Yeah.
Theoretically. We'll see.
Theoretically.
Alrighty, well, it begins on Saturday at 3 p.m. I really would have preferred a noon start, personally, if I have to go to hockey on Saturday. But you win some, you lose some. It should be fun. We will have you covered from top to bottom on the UConn Women's Basketball Weekly. We're going to try and put out some more quick hit podcasts and quick game recaps, stuff like that, throughout the tournament. So keep an eye out on your feed for that. And most of all, it should be fun. So once again, sign up for our bracket group. That's on ESPN's bracket or tournament challenge, I think they call it. Chasing Perfection. Very simple. You should see me in it. And I think that'll do it. So next time we record our full-fledged podcast, we'll be looking ahead, most likely, to regionals.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Bye.